GMV. There's a team that, as you know, are looking at the 90-day turnaround plan. Will it rush you? How far is it in ensuring that SBA is functioning more effectively? And where is it going to? And then also look at its project on transformation and encourage governance, VEE policies and plans. And the other issues no longer will come, but we hand over to Ms. Dudumyeni and her team to introduce them. And since we're meeting you the first time, chairperson, we'd be grateful if you just tell us who's part of the team. And we're pretty informal now, as agreed to by majority, that we call each other by first name. But obviously, when we have external stakeholders and so on, you know, we address you the way you should be addressed appropriately. But and also in our committee, we like to encourage question time so that it's an interactive process. And while you're with National Treasury, we'll obviously see you until things get better reasonably often to negotiate that. So this is the first attempt to engage with you. And we hand over to you and your team. Thank you very much.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members of the Standing Committee on Finance, my colleagues from the South African Airways, my name is Dudumyeni. I also want to acknowledge the presence of the National Treasury leadership of the facility. I greet all the members here. I think everyone else that I may not have mentioned. May I first, Honourable Chairperson, introduce the SA representatives that are here and the board member of South African Airways next to me. With your permission, Honourable Chair, I will ask everyone to introduce themselves and give their names and titles. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members, National Treasury, Chairperson of SAA Board, the Executive of SAA, my name is Yakin Quinan, the non-executive director of South African Airways.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, my colleagues, and our shareholder representatives. My name is Yuki, I'm the acting CEO of South African Airways.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, other attendees and guests. My name is Hofmeyer. I'm the CFO of South African Airways.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Julian Duplessis, Acting Chief Strategy Officer at South African Airways.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Chair of the CA. And from Treasurer and all the Honourable Members, my name is Zubisa Ramasia, General Manager for Operation South African Airways. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. All protocols of health. I'm Masimba Dawa. I'm the Chief Procurement Officer for South African Airways.
National Treasury is here. Thank you very much. Over to you, Chairperson.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity to come before this committee to present on the few areas that have been identified for this particular meeting today, starting from the 90-day action plan that was devised as a plan that was going to assist us to recover the lost ground from the implementation of the turnaround strategy, as well as also to incorporate some of the elements of the turnaround strategy after being reviewed by the National Treasury. With that little background, I'm just going to ask the acting CEO, Ms. Michelle, to take us through the high-level overview of the turnaround strategy and the presentation for today, and then we'll take questions.
Thank you, Chair. The content of our presentation is as follows. We'll start with an overview. We'll then go to the refined and long-term turnaround strategy. We'll look at our strategy summarized, which covers our review of our network and fleet, and increase in revenue, our cost reductions, and we'll look at our financial performance, and then we will then conclude. I will start with In the next slide here, we've got an overview. We had a long-term turnaround strategy, which was crafted and developed in April of 2013. It was the first holistic strategy that was created to address challenges that the airline was experiencing. And following on that with any strategy, it's followed by implementation. We started implementing in April 2013. However, in 2014, we experienced some challenges and some snags in terms of our implementation. And there was delay in terms of cancellation of the routes, which were not profitable, and also in terms of acquisition of a new fleet. And we had new assumptions when we prepared the strategy, the long-term turnaround strategy. We had made some assumptions, and one of those major assumptions that we would get an equity injection from the shareholder. So based on that, with the slowdown of implementation plan, we had that to come up with a 90-day action plan. It was a 90-day action plan which got approved by the board and the inter-ministerial committee and our shareholder. We then have to make sure that we put the implementation of the strategy on track. Following that, from April of 2015, we have a corporate plan which has been accepted by our shareholder, and which is what we, and supported by the shareholder compact, is what's focusing on implementation at this point in time. So based on the 90-day plan and following on the 90-day plan, we then look at the revalidation of the long-term general strategy, and this is what we are focusing on at this point in time. In the 90-day plan, we looked at commercial and financial interventions. We looked at the cost compression, and we achieved our cost compression target. The network remediation, we closed the Beijing and Mumbai route, and we launched a new route in Abu Dhabi. We also had to address in the 90-day plan the governance defects. The first one was the memorandum of incorporation that had to be revised and submitted to our shareholder. And the second one was the materiality and significance framework as well as the review of that. We had to review the assumptions in terms of the fuel price. Also, we had to look at the current internal and competitive realities of the airline landscape. In terms of the refinements of the long-term turnaround strategy, we just want to assure that the core strategy didn't change. We looked at our vision, which is to be Africa's leading world-class airline, and it still stands and it's still solid. We looked at our mission to deliver commercially sustainable world-class airline and aviation services in South Africa and African continent, and to our tourism and trading partners. Our core strategy initiative is to support South Africa's national and developmental agenda to achieve and maintain commercial sustainability, and to provide excellent customer service, to achieve consistent, efficient, and effective operations, and to foster excellence in performance. In terms of our subsidiaries, we have Air Passenger and Cargo Services, and the premium direct services to 42 destinations in 30 countries, and further 1,400 star and coach shared destinations around the world. Mango is our low-cost operator, it's profitable, and generating cash in domestic and regional services. We have South African Airways Technical, which is our largest SAA accredited aircraft maintenance. 60,000 airline meals purchased per day. Our mandate has remained unchanged. We are informed by the Act number 5, FAA Act number 5 of 2007. The company's memorandum of incorporation defines the main objective of FAA as to engage in passenger and airline transport services, air charter services, and other related services. So we wish to confirm that the post strategy and our mandate is still on track. In terms of the refinement of the LCCS, we had to look at the areas that needed to be addressed and adjusted. As mentioned earlier, certain assumptions were defined and a three-year corporate term completed, incorporating the following amendments. So the amendment was the financial plan was adjusted based on revised exchange rate and fuel price assumptions. Following all that, the assumption had been adjusted in that there was no equity injection. We had to include the headcount regionalization as part of headcount, as part of the cost compression and also part of efficiency and productivity for our employees. We had to look at increased focus on implementation and performance management in the organization. We had to do fleet and network clean and plan. We had to revise what we had, and then the provision was made for the current competitive landscape. This refinement was done in consultation with our shareholder, National Treasury, as well as our government department, but it was ultimately approved by the South African Airways Board. This is the one major that looks at our strategy and our focus, and it focuses on our strategic initiatives in line with our strategic alignment. Whatever we do is to maintain and strive to achieve shareholder value. In terms of our strategic initiative of attaining and maintaining and achieving financial sustainability, we looked at driving revenue growth, we looked at reducing, maintaining, and correcting costs so that we can be profitable and sustainable. In terms of providing excellent customer service, in order for us to deliver a consistent and efficient customer experience, we need to grow our market share, we need to improve our customer satisfaction and retention. For us to be able to achieve consistent, efficient and effective operations, we are looking at maintaining safe operations, and all of the members present here, our honorable members present, are aware that SAA holds a very proud safe record in the world. We're looking at improving our operational efficiency and enhancing our IT infrastructure and support to ensure that our operations run smoothly. We're looking at strengthening governance and compliance, improving our risk management and the risk profile, and optimizing our asset utilization. We're also looking at enhancing our environmental contribution. We're involved in a number of interesting environmental initiatives that some of them are going to be groundbreaking. We are contributing to the economic development of our country. In terms of fostering performance excellence, we are focusing on improving our people productivity, developing and retaining our talent, and looking at creating a positive culture and a positive work environment. Our main focus is we need to grow revenue, reduce our costs, in order for us to achieve a long-term sustainability. And through you, Chairperson of SAA, can I then hand over the second part of the strategy to the Acting Chief Strategy Officer, Mr. Joshua Jupiter.
As CEO, you can't just fix the problem of the airline by cutting costs. You also need to look at closing the revenue. Now, as part of a 90-day plan, we reviewed the whole airline's network plan, and we refined it based on the current forecast demands. From a time when we stopped with the long-term turnaround strategy, many market forces have changed. You had multiple new entrants in the market. So we revised our network plan, saying where we're flying, with what aircraft we're flying. So that is our network and fleet plan we revised to see how we can address all the challenges currently in the market. Now, doing this, we were using Oxford Economics again to ensure that every route we fly to is beneficial to the country as well. And if you look at the overall impact of SA, we are contributing 0.3% to the country's GDP, supports 85,000 jobs out there. So all of this was taken into consideration. Based on this, a fleet plan was designed and formed part of the core strategy going forward. So if we have a look at what we have done, in the next 2 years, we're looking at an approximate revenue growth of around 2.5 billion rand in terms of initiatives that we are going to implement. We're looking firstly to focus the SAA brand on African growth and special network optimization. That is clear from some of the actions we have already taken. For example, flying to Washington via Accra. We are also looking at growth of SAA in the regional markets by redeploying some of the SAA capacity from the domestic markets. Now, there is not just new destinations, it's also an increase of frequency and increase of capacity into the regional markets. For example, we are currently waiting for final approval to open a new route to Abuja. Then we've got on the domestic side, we need to grow our potential there with our low-cost market carrier, with Mango. And so you would have seen in the newspapers that we are currently considering opening the route from Maseru to Durban. So we are actively implementing the strategy. So it's not just something on paper, it's something that we're actually doing at this point in time. We have some impact currently in terms of our forecast with the unintended negative consequences of the visa and immigration regulations that we're currently experiencing. And I think Wolf will say, our CFO will say something more about that later. If I can now ask the chair to maybe give over to Wolf to talk on the financial side.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. One of the important legs of the strategy is to reduce our costs. We label it internally as cost compression. We look at what do we mean by cost compression. We mean that we don't just save costs on a once-off basis. The cost we actually save is saved on a sustainable basis by changing the way we do things and processes. So that's why we label it cost compression. But I mean, where we are now, South Africa and the African market, both operating depressed and harsh operating conditions, and I think all the airlines need to focus on the costs and to what extent they can actually reduce their costs, especially with the commoditization of the market. SAA has been driving a successful cost competition program. This basically started in 2012. In 2012, we saw the first hike in fuel price, and it hit us very hard at the time, and that actually sparked the requirement internally for this cost compression program. We established a committee and we launched projects to see to what extent we could save costs. In the third year, we actually saved in excess of 1 billion rand on a sustainable basis. The second year, we saved under 500 million and last year, about 700 million. So in total, over the last 3 years, we already saved 2.2 billion rand on a sustainable basis from our cost base. At the time we set a target, we achieved a target at the end of last financial year. We're looking at a target of 30% over the 6 years. We already achieved 17%, and for the next 2 years, we're looking at a further 15% reduction. So I think it's fair to say that cost reduction remains a priority and focus for the group. If we look at the key focus areas that we looked at from a cost reduction point of view, aircraft cost reduction, cost of aircraft, we looked at renegotiating leases. We've had some legacy transactions from the past where we had entered into contracts to actually acquire aircraft at very high prices. This transaction was entered into in 2002. It was renegotiated, and the first delivery actually took place in 2013. Unfortunately, there were cost escalations in contract, which obviously increased the basis cost. To some extent, by the time we actually took delivery of these aircraft, or some of these aircraft, the actual contract price exceeded the market price and the market value. Hence, at each delivery, we had to actually recognize an impairment to the extent of approximately $10 million per aircraft. So that's just a bit of background on we looked at renegotiating these this transaction. We took delivery of 10 aircraft of this transaction. There is still a further 10 aircraft that needs to be delivered. We're in the process of negotiating a transaction whereby we will be able to waive this unnecessary impairment and also have positive benefits on not needing to pay what we call PDPs. It's basically deposits on these aircraft, which is a huge cash drain on the company. So we look forward to that transaction. We also look at entering or renegotiating some of our existing leases. We were very successful with that. Some of these lease expenses, we managed to reduce our lease cost by about 40-50%, which obviously has a very positive impact on the bottom line. With regard to people reduction, the acting CEO alluded to that on the headcount rationalization progress. I'm not going to elaborate on that. We also looked at another area that we looked at to save costs were on the procurement savings. We looked at various contracts and entered into negotiations to see to what extent we can renegotiate the costs. We were very successful in that regard as well. Next point, maintenance costs, renegotiations. That's also part of, it's a very important part. Maintenance cost is a very significant cost item in our cost base. And as we renegotiate some of the lease payments, we also renegotiate the maintenance cost. Specifically, we do have old generation aircraft, and with the fuel cost that has increased over the last couple of months, some of these old aircraft, which we actually label fuel gases, actually can be operated on a more profitable basis with the reduction of the fuel price. So what we have done is we have extended some of these leases. These are basically end-of-life aircraft, so we could leverage on that and the fact that the lessors would be very difficult for the lessors actually place these aircraft by the airlines. So we leverage on that fact and we were able to reduce the lease rates by about 50-60%, as I mentioned, and together with that, the maintenance on these aircraft. Normally, you are liable for maintenance reserves. That is a cash out on a monthly basis that you pay to the lessor as some kind of a security deposit. Just for him to be insured that we actually maintain the aircraft properly. What happens then is as you actually maintain the aircraft and you incur the maintenance cost, you can actually claim then against this deposit. But this deposit is a cash outflow, and we all know cash has a cost. We managed to renegotiate some of these maintenance reserves to zero. The other important aspect is once you return the aircraft, you have what's called return conditions. That is a cost that if you return an aircraft to the lessor, it has to be in the exact same condition as the day you actually took delivery of that aircraft. Whether it's for 7 years or 12 years, that's the way aircraft are maintained. Now, there's a huge cost involved to that. You have to provide for those type of service and condition costs. We also managed to negotiate these to basically some of them to zero because you are end-of-life aircraft. So all these things actually add up to saving costs and reducing our cost base. Aircraft utilization improvements, what we do there is we see to what extent we can change the gauge of the aircraft, we see if we can more optimally deploy the aircraft. So we have this advantage to other airlines in the world that if you look at the European airlines that travel east to west, their aircraft is utilized much, much better than our aircraft. Most of our long-haul aircraft, you fly away in the evening, land in the morning, the aircraft stands there for the whole day, and then only at night flights again. So that's typically how you see how you can increase the utilization of the aircraft. But there are ways that we try to do that locally, domestically, and internationally. So if you look at that graph, it shows the savings to date and what we predict until 2018. With regard to financial performance, I cannot divulge any numbers for the financial year ended of March 2015. We have our AGM at the beginning of October when the results will be released. But I think it's safe to say that we did encounter a very difficult operating environment marked by increased competition. I don't think I need to elaborate on that. Revenue pressures, for instance, Ebola and xenophobia, and also other external factors that we don't have control over. A very important one, and I'll elaborate on that later, is the weakened currency that severely affects our airline. Legacy endeavors, I touched on it just now, where we took delivery of 10 aircraft over the last two financial years. We had to impair each aircraft at delivery by in excess of $10 million. So for the 10 aircraft, we had to impair in the region of about $1.2 billion on these aircraft. That fortunately is at end because we managed to renegotiate the balance of the 10. Finance costs, also a big item for us on the income statement, but also increasingly more important, and I'll also touch on that later. It's basically because we need to continue to rely on debt funding for our capital requirements. Current financial year, I'm going to touch on it now. Continuing challenges with regard to weakening currency once again, new immigration regulations that Joshua touched on, it has a severe impact on our revenue together with the, let's say, tailing of the dollar. I think the hype is over, but we haven't recovered fully from that yet. And also intensified competition. You can look at all these logos at the bottom, all new entrants in the domestic market. There's obviously an oversupply of capacity, and it's very tricky to operate in such an environment because we need to protect our load factors, and sometimes by increasing the load factor you have got to sacrifice some of your yield, but we need to look at an option on that. On the next slide, Honourable Chair, that's where I'd like to focus on is, you can see that this graph basically indicates the currency movements from 2011 and from yesterday 2016. You'll see there that from 2011 to 2012, the rand appreciated by 30%, 12%, 13%, 20%, 14%, and 15%, 15%, and year-to-date already 10%. On a cumulative basis, over the last 5 years, the rand lost 97% of its value. Now, of our total operating expenses, 60% is basically dollar denominated or strong currency denominated, where only 40% of our revenue is strong currency or dollar denominated. So there you can see the net exposure between our costs that are dollar denominated and our revenue. The graph below that just shows the impact on the currency on the fuel price. Our fuel cost is approximately about 35% of our total operating expense base. But if you look at the blue line, basically shows you the dollar price of Brent, and it reduced from the high of 114 to a current low, I know it's below at the moment, but $61 per barrel, which is approximately about a 50% reduction in dollar price of Brent. If you look at the rand price that we pay for Brent, converted obviously to rand, you can see that we only have a reduction of slightly less than 30%. So we don't get the full benefit of the oil, the reduction of the oil price because of our weakened currency. Next slide, I would just like to touch on the current year performance. Although we still are making SAA's internet operating results has improved by 43% year on year. From a revenue point of view, revenue levels, 11% there was actually 7%. Revenue is 7% lower than the prior year. The reason for that is largely from average fares across the industry on the back of lower oil price, as I mentioned. Included in your airfare, you've got fuel levy as the oil price reduces, obviously has an impact on fares, we reduce fares. But also competition, as I said, we need to increase our load factors, you need to sometimes drop your airfares to gain market share and increase your load factors. And also the challenging operating environment. So we are experiencing a reduction in our revenues, and that's a huge focus going forward from a strategic point of view, identifying initiatives to improve our revenue. Operating costs, that remain well controlled on our cost compression efforts. Year-to-date expenditure is 9% lower year-on-year than the previous financial year. It is, it has obviously been assisted by the lower fuel price, but if I exclude the impact of the fuel price, because we still on a year-on-year basis, we've lowered our cost base. Interest charge. Now, interest charge increased significantly due to the increased reliance on debt funding, and there I would like to direct you to the next page, where we also have a chart on the profile of our debt cost. In 2011, we had 113 million. 2012, 197, increased to 266, 318, 561, and our 2016 forecast, 848 million rand. On a cumulative basis, over the 5 or 6 years, we are looking at 2.3 billion that we are paying the interest cost alone. Obviously, that is due to us having to rely on debt funding for our working capital expenditure requirements. Thank you, Chair. I'll hand it back to our CEO.
Thank you. In conclusion, we are looking at the challenges that we're facing, which we marked in that slide as well. The weakening currency, looking at the leadership capability in the organization, had a great impact in terms of continuity, in terms of implementation of strategy. The weakening currency is alluded by our CFO. Competition has intensified, as also indicated by our Chief Strategy Officer. The unintended consequences of immigration, which also and visa regulations, which also impacting on our revenue. Our current capital structure on the non-existence thereof is also a challenge. However, despite all the challenges, we are still rated as best full service airline in Africa. We're still rated as the best safety record in the world. MEM was rated the best low-cost carrier in Africa. We have optimized our network and fleet. We have now have an embedded culture of cost compression. Our operational performance is improving. Our long-term turnaround strategy is refined and is translated into our performance and to ensure that we measure the right strategic initiatives. So our strategy implementation continues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Chair, with the members, David, yes. Anybody else? Alf, Tinky, Lauren, yes, sorry, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have several questions, but perhaps I will just kick off with three in the first round. Certainly, one looks at the presentation, and certainly one digs into the corporate integrated report. I mean, it would seem that South African Airways should be rechristened South African Airways if you look at the losses that have been made over the last two financial years. But let me begin with my first question, which goes to the issue which you concluded with, which is the whole question of leadership instability. Now, I would put a question directly to the chairperson. If you look at the chairperson's record, we have the long-term turnaround strategy, we have the refined long-term turnaround strategy, we have the 90-day action plan, and now we have the 2014 corporate plan. We have massive losses, 1.2 billion rand in 2012-13, 2.6 billion rand in 2013-14, and according to the corporate report, SAA is a growing concern, but only for the next 12 months. It appears to me, with respect, Chairperson, you are ground zero of the leadership problem at SAA, and that it would be in the public interest and indeed in the interest of SAA if you resigned. And so my question to you is, will you act in the interests of the airline and in the public interest and announce here today that you will resign? Thank you. My next question, Chairperson, has to do again with the question of leadership instability. We have an acting CEO, which I think is possibly the fourth CEO that I've, acting CEO that I've counted. I'd like to know whether there is a process underway, an executive search process, to identify and recruit a CEO who does have the necessary experience and expertise in the airline industry to turn SAA around. That's the second question. And my third question, Chair, relates to the Emirates deal. Now, I mean, it is a matter of, in the public domain, that at some point in June 2015, a deal with the Emirates airline, which I understand was a co-share agreement, possibly an agreement involving streamlining of routes, which could have had significant savings, perhaps up to 1.7 billion rands for SAA. That deal was terminated under mysterious circumstances. It is alleged in the public domain that the chairperson received a call from President Jacob Zuma and then instructed the acting CEO at the time to terminate the deal moments or hours before it was due to be signed. And so my question to the chairperson is, did you receive a call from President Jacob Zuma, or indeed any other representative of the shareholder instructing you or requesting you to terminate the deal with Emirates? If you did, will you confirm that or name the person who acted on behalf of the shareholder who called you? Did you instruct the CEO to terminate the deal? And if you did what were the reasons for that termination? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just follow on what David had said in terms of the plans. And we've got all the plans, but nowhere do I see there a kind of financial plan of in year dot we will turn this around and there will be a profit. I'm sure a plan includes a financial plan as to when will we see a profit. I gather from you that there won't be a profit when you announce the results for the year that's just behind us. So, you know, is it the next year? Is it the year after that? So if you could give us some indication of that. Then I'm curious about this high cost of bringing the aircraft condition up to scratch at the end of the life before you hand it back to the lessor. It seems to indicate to me that the maintenance hasn't been up to scratch yet. There's a huge cost at the end of the life to bring it back up to scratch. And is that part of the cost compression? And what impact may that or may not have on safety? I think there's a subject which is slowly gaining consensus throughout the country now that the new visa regulations have had a huge impact on our economy. You've indicated they've had an impact on your business. Could you give us some idea of what the impact is in terms of rand and cents? I mean, obviously, it's not going to be cents. I mean, that's a bit silly of me to even use the word cents. But is it costing you a billion rand or is it costing you 100,000 rand or 10,000 rand? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jefferson. And let me welcome the presentations as made. Just a few questions, Chair, and I would appeal to members of this committee. I know I've been away for some time. But I think the practice in this committee, it's for us to make sure that we base our issues and engagement on facts and not rumors or newspaper cuttings and all other things, so that as we engage with various institutions, we should be hearing all those things. So some of these things of saying President Jacob Zuma phoned and all those things, I think they're very unfair to the members who are here. And if we want to engage with the president, we can do that ourselves and get the facts. Chair, a few things, if you look at the presentation that was made, and I'm happy that Treasurer is here. You know, when Treasurer speaks about cost-cutting mechanisms, one of the first things that they look at is what are the things that makes us to lose more money as an institution, as a department, and all those things. They go to personnel, they go to the waters and all those things that we are drinking, and the food and all other things. I was looking at your subsidiaries, and I think, is it Chef Woodward? There's one of this, HF, I think it's a subsidiary as well. And if it's a subsidiary, it means most of the things are in-house than you buy. But probably you may be buying wine, you may be buying wood. I mean, those are the things that I'm first even looking at. Are we getting any more money for those things? Or because it's SAA, then we can buy a bottle of wine at 300 rand when it is sold at 6 rand. You know, those are small things, but they matter. Because I looked at, and I was listening very carefully to the CFO. You were talking more on your network or whatever and all those things, but nothing around the smaller things that really have more impact on your cost-saving measures. And I think it's something that we also want to hear from you. I know in our other lives, departments we buy a bottle of this water which costs 4 rand at 16 or 20 rand. And it may be possible that the same water we're drinking in SAA, you are being taken for that. And those are the things and analysis that you need to take so that as do your overall turnaround strategy, also look at this one of things that may be a challenge. The other issue, which I think probably going forward, with a follow-up meeting, Chair, which I would propose with the Minister of the Shareholders, is whether to check whether the shareholder contract is there, is it monitored, is it implemented, or and all those things. But the other one is something is that you have leadership instability. People are acting and all those things. And for as long as you have an aging institution like this, you have to have people that are concerned so that the institution is able to run. So some of those things, Chair, I think we have to take up with the minister at some point. If you look at the profitability of Mango, and I will give my experience, a small experience that I had a month or so ago when we went to KZN. We flew Mango and we were told there's no SAA line from that area. And one of the interesting things was that Mango was so packed. And how can you have Mango being so packed, and probably you may have discontinued it because you thought it's not profitable. But I don't think, I'm a layperson, of course, and I don't have any experience in aviation and all those things. But I don't think some of these things we are doing, or my view is that Mango is becoming profitable at the expense of SAE. So convince me otherwise. Because that line can still do better through SAA as well. And enhance, I mean, they're brother, a mother and child, so they can still keep each other together, but also do everything in litigations that you think you can do. But I still feel that line SAA can still do better between Cape Town and and Andrew Queen. The same applies to some of the things. I'm glad that you wrote here that you've got a footprint in Africa. And I think that's the right direction for you to take. But as to how efficiently are you working around that so that your vision is also realized and you can also up some of the challenges and deal with the revenue raising mechanism around it. It's something that some of us will really want to see happening. So my appeal, Chair, is that if we can have a session as a committee with the minister around the issue of the shareholder contract, whether it's there or not there, but also impress upon the issue of having a stable leadership in this institution, and then take all the other things as this picture.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I'm not a market expert, but there are a few things I want to raise and that I want to engage you. But I want to start with a little bit that says, you see, when you govern, the difficulty of governance is that you need to implement. So others can question what to do, but the frustration of encountering challenges when you implement is only experienced by those who are in charge, right? We're going to ask you questions. You the management of SAA, you know what you're going through on a daily basis when you have to bring it in around strategy. So if it's easy from our side to ask questions, it's okay. But the questions will help to unlock some of the challenges that you have identified. As we sit here, we're not going to pretend that there is no challenges in SAA. Some you have listed them yourself, leadership studies, team, blah, blah, blah. Now, when I start with a small story about a guy in my hometown, okay, who operates there's an old man we call Uncle Laman. His name is Aaron. He operates the General Dealer. That old man operated the General Dealer before my mother was born. And it's been going on. So different people came over supermarkets, big ones, and all sorts of things, restaurants. But it kept on going strong on a daily basis. Now, when I grew up, I was fascinated by this old man because there was nothing interesting about his shop. Actually, it was a little bit dirty. Now, I realized that his marketing strategy was tight. So he competed on the basis of price. He was cheaper, therefore his commodities ran faster, so he was able to have revenue stability in his business. So those who put huge supermarkets and restaurants, their business went on. They were beautiful restaurants and supermarkets with everything in them. But the relationship with the client and the price was the disadvantage. So all these shops I'm talking about died, or except that one is still there. So that I think is the homework for SAA. Because when I was trying to study marketing at UCT, one of the things they told us is that it doesn't matter whether the commodity is valuable. It's how you market it, you know, how you price it. So when you look at this overhauling system that you want to put in, you mentioned the word groundbreaking. So for you to achieve the groundbreaking breakthrough, that there needs to be a specific way of doing things different from how you've been doing them before. But to me, it's neither here or there whether there's leadership strategy. Leadership will come and go. If the CEO doesn't deliver, you will go then. Another one will come. But whoever who comes should be able to work on the strategies and the plans that can turn around the institution to get it out. So to me, it's neither here nor there whether there's new management or not. Second to that, I'm interested to know whether have you negotiated your fuel price. I don't know if your supplier is PetroSA, is it Chevron, whoever. Have you negotiated
A plus, so that you can benefit from that as and when the fuel cost goes up or down. Because that's very important. For instance, if you have some fuel in stocks, I'll make an example here. If purchase as a import fuel when the price cost was higher, when it goes up, it must still sell it to the same price. So it can create problems there. So I'm interested to that. But we monitor the shareholder to the national treasury. So if you're saying that you went down because of equity injection, I disagree with you. You can't rely only on equity injection from national treasury for your own performance. You should be able to project beforehand, even if he has this limited injection, how will you survive? Including planning for economic failure. We might experience a second one. What will be your plan? And that's what Madam Bani says, your financial plan. There needs to be a strategy. Well, Madam Bani is honorable health, I'm sorry. Maybe the name. It's honorable health. Now, also we need to know what is your market saturation analysis, because it's not being presented here. And then when market saturates, you move on. So where is that strategy? To say, if this market saturated, you are able to have, in advance, your 10-year, 20-year plan that will be able to stick to that. Well, I'll want to get much into the cost compression. To me, your cost compression has been the easiest one. Reducing foods, to me, it's neither here nor there. It doesn't make a big impact, unless if you present in percentage terms, so that we can see the impact. Because if you go to other European countries, they might even want to sell caviar. They've not tested that part because it's part of their nation. So while I go to say, I use it religiously, I will always make sure that every trip I take, I'm loyal to the domestic airlines. So, but there are people because I recall the state is giving, but if you have an individual consumer who look at packages available and see what's not being attracted, they will choose a different airline. It's basic. So there should be something that entices the consumer to be able to attract. Because part of marketing, they say, you must have a stable idea. It must not move. It doesn't matter whether the price changes or not. It must not move. It's because of this enticement that will make them stick. Now, what I used to observe every time I fly international flights, for instance, and I'm going to use names, and the media feature, I don't know how popular I am, British Airways does not only run international flights in South Africa, they also run local flights. Now, the question I've been asking myself all these years is that does South African Airways also run local flights in Britain? And if not, why do you come to that agreement? Why do you come to that political agreement that seeks to undermine our own benefits? What are the country interests? You know? Because we lose our market share to them. And that's not the only country we lose our market share to. Including those who are in the alliance that we have. Well, the visa regulations, they are very new, Chair. It can't be the only problem. It's a very new phenomenon that still needs to be discussed. It doesn't have a big impact. It just happens now. Over the past 3 financial years, we've been losing revenue at large scale. So maybe let's dispatch that from this discussion so that we can come at an interstage where we evaluate the impact of the financial year. Because the financial year has come to the end, so I don't even know how that is featuring so quickly. Of course, adjustments need to be made. I don't know, our colleagues in the High Committee might have already made this proposal. One of the adjustments that needs to be made, it's not even about whether you lease aircraft or to debate whether you need new ones. I believe we need to be competitive. So the marketing strategy is what I'm interested in, to hear how we're going to market ourselves in such a way that will appeal to consumers to fly South African Airways over and above any other airline. One of the interesting things that I liked about Mango was that it was offering free Wi-Fi. It was exciting. But let me tell you something that was a turn-off. Consumer doesn't want to see payments made directly. If you say buy a banana, you could include that cost in the fare. If I buy, I'll bring my own scarf in the flight. But if I don't know that I'm paying for that apple, you say to be providing it for free. I'd be happy to pay more because I'm not aware that I'm paying for that banana. You know, but you know people that are Shall we close there? Because I think we have a second bite. But basically, these are a few things I want to read and I'll do this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. As part of the cost reduction which were presented here is something called the people cost reduction, which is headcount regularization and processing. Is that the retrenchment of workers? Are you retrenching workers to deal with cost? And if you are retrenching, how many have you retrenched thus far? And how many are you still going to retrench? Because the logic that the first casualty for travel to public institutions should be workers is problematic. It also reflects a broader misdiagnosis of what could be the problem of SAE. I think we'll deal with that later on. Maybe to take everyone's approach to the question on Emirates is, what was the deal and why was it cancelled? I think that is how the question could come. We'll attend to those who have instructed to cancel a deal to the necessary deal and everything else. But what was it about that? Three, the SAE cargo. Are you selling SAE cargo to Bitwest? Because the other time when we went to SAE cargo, workers were panicking there that Bitwest is going to take over SAE cargo and they are facing possible retractions as well in that section. It might be a panic on the ship floor. It may not be true. So you might have to clarify that it's true or not. And then I want to get information about your internal procurement on the, as a matter of fact, Chairperson, the food items in SAE flights is made in Denmark, made in Australia. And as a public institution, I thought the agreement which you had with the Department of Public Industry was amongst other things to say that you should source the goods and services that you utilize in the country. But there are a lot of things which are not made in South Africa which are part of your product. I wish I had brought some of those things, but there are lots of the businesses. Now, I know what it is. I always look at the origins of all food items. I just like watching. I normally don't eat in those platforms. that is the situation. But also then the agreement which did not present. One of the slides, the ones which give us on the black industrialist, you don't spoke to that. That is, you're going to avail opportunities to black women-owned corporations and black youth-owned corporations and people with disabilities and brutal veterans. But your progress support this is that you have just had meetings of meetings. Are there black-owned women corporations or black-owned youth corporations which are doing business with SAE, and what are they doing? That is a specific question. Would I agree that there might be internal factors to the problems of SAE, the currency question, the visa regulations? I agree that across a lot of problems, and maybe a variety of other external factors. But I think there are also objective internal factors, and that part of that is the chairperson of the board of SAE. Since it's too poor, it's too poor, who's hired and hired us, which is a private company, it's a personal company. You can't run an institution like that. There should be a sense of accountability. Everyone else must be held accountable. And that is who the chairperson must be. Certain principles that you operate within. You can't be that powerful and highly protected to do things as in one use. It will collapse that institution. It's not good. Look, maybe Ethiopian Airlines is bigger than SAA now. And the conditions upon which it operates in, the city it operates in, and the circumstances are not better than where you are as SAE. But it doesn't mean that LS is bigger than you, and it's making profits. And I can tell you that the problems why SAE is in crisis is because of the subjective weaknesses, which includes a two powerful services who just possess everyone around them. fires people and appoints certain CEOs and changes them and all those other things. Everyone else is acting, it's like a drama. When everyone else is acting, it's like a drama, it must be. And I get this one then when the ANC would want to defend wrong. So let us in principle and deal with issues in an open way so that we were helping everyone. So some of the things that is the focus. So the interventions that should be made is about saving jobs of the people who are there and everything else. But if you have diagnosed the problem, you'll end up doing those things we call head compression.
You have every express, you have every ending. There's no nothing to write about.
We're not getting that, and that is concerning me. And again, I think from the public shareholder perspective, we are concerned about the bottom line. How can it be that if you are government owned, we don't care about the bottom line? Unfortunately, we care about the bottom line. We do. We have that responsibility. And as a member of the ANC, that 50% people, I mean, others that gave us the mandate, they are expecting that such entities are going to be exemplary. And I am concerned because there was a court case the other day, of course, it's a day on it, but I am saying, one would have expected that there would have been some comparative analysis that says, you know, these are the things that are happening with our competitors. And I'm also very concerned that we are also told that they would have some of the initiatives is that you will find that your flight is flying to London or something like that, then it parks there and then, you know, and it sits there the whole day until it comes back and what do you. But when you are talking about a turnaround, what is a turnaround? A turnaround is supposed to be a cure of that industrial sickness. And we are not getting the sense that, you know, you are saying to us, those flights, you are not being assertive in telling us that those flights that are parking, that we are actually reviewing in our routes. We are going to be cancelling all the unprofitable routes. And we are going to be focusing, maximizing on those routes where we are profitable. Now, Chair, I'm very careful when people come with strategy, when people start confusing strategy and mandate. A mandate and strategy are two different things. They're two different things. A mandate is what you are supposed to be doing. And also a strategy, normal strategy is different from a turnaround strategy. A turnaround strategy does not just come. It's not your normal strategy. It comes because you are realizing that you are running at a loss. And what should be the primary driver should be the profitability. That's sense, logic. And I'm not guessing that. And Chair, I just want you to know, from the team from FAA and the leadership from FAA, how are they, what are the key, just give us at least five key root causes of the problems at FAA. Then, tell us what are you doing about those. Simple. Nothing complicated. I want to understand what is the five root causes of the problems. Then what are you doing about it? Then we can then start engaging. At this stage, it's very difficult. I can't even engage on your balance sheet. Because I don't even know the hierarchy of your challenges. I don't know what are your key cost drivers. How am I going to engage with you when I don't know that the cost drivers of your institution? And finally, Chair, I ask God that it's also going to be very important for us to understand that as much as we understand the increased competition, you are facing that as a just a difficult operating environment. I'm not getting what are you doing to up your game. You are in a highly competitive environment. You are not telling us about your skills profile. You are not telling us about what is your competitive advantage. What? Yes, I hear that you have lowered, you know, we are the safest airline and what have you. But I am not getting it from the standpoint of saying, this is the problem that we have. These are the areas that we are going to be capitalizing on in order to make the mind our profitability. I'm not getting that. And I want you to get that because I care about this airline. We can't afford to have a big parasitical like FAA not doing that. Because it starts like that, before you know it, there is a paralysis in the whole the whole administration, there will be paralysis in all other levels. So it is very important that since you've been referred to this committee, we do our due diligence and we become extremely prudent in our approach to you, because we are not going to be worried about name calling and things like that. We want to treat the problem. We don't want to play the tapping. We want to play the problem. We want to play more. So we want you to be as honest as possible so that we are actually assisting you in navigating through this very difficult period that you are going through. And finally, Chairperson, I want to know, what is different about the turnaround strategy from all the other turnaround strategies? For the past 10 years, SAA has been having one turnaround strategy after the other. What is different about this one? Just wait me. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also join the member by welcoming the presentation. Chair, I have listened most of the things here and the members have spoken to them. I will only speak to the view that they have not touched on or emphasized. I'll start with what the Honourable Orban has said. I don't really feel the sense that the leadership and the management of SAA are feeling the problem. I don't get that feeling. As they present here, the channel strategy is like, it's normal, business as usual, they just want to change things. And to me, I'm not convinced that they feel the pain of the problem that they're causing for the country. Because we have to do oversight over this entity. We have to assist in the interest of the citizens of the country, of South Africa. But how is this going to happen? Because it's like you are doing things like it's business as usual. And you don't mind, because you know whatever goes wrong will run to the government, go to Treasury, and you'll be bailed out. How sustainable are you? When are you going to be able to run the entity on your own without relying on knowing? You know, another member yesterday spoke of names and babysitting and children, and it became hot. But it looks like you want to be babysat
by.
I'm trying to see the memory. But to me, James, I can characterize SAA tonight. Each time they come running, because they know they are going to be laid out, and this cannot be accepted, really. On the issue of leadership instability, from my understanding, and I need confirmation from the leadership here, the board is an internal board, and I think it's time to come to end somewhere in September, October. I just need confirmation. And I hope that the Treasury will do an honorable thing and appoint people who are going to lead us in a correct way and, be able to run the entity. They also spoke of cost reduction. Honorable Speaker, I spoke of the cost attainment strategy that the Treasury is introducing to other departments and other entities. I think that also, if we can also get that to say how are they going to affect the cost attainment strategy, because they have a problem. But do you foresee any job losses going forward? and how do you intend to deal with that? Chairperson, the competition is too high for SAA. Like I'm saying, we have no training. Members from this parliament have offered to use other airlines than SAA, and not everybody is going to be loyal. You can't rely on lawyers. There are members who are using other airlines because they get the best from those airlines. Honorable Sonia mentioned one competition. They have the best package. What are you doing? Have you ever been married to get worried to check why is VA, you know, doing better than us? Why are South Africans choosing VA over SAA? You know, members of this parliament, why is that happening? I think you need to get worried. And we are getting worried on your behalf, but you are relaxed. You check. So it's a problem, Chairperson. So, and I just want to reduce the cost, but also check on the services. Whether you give quality service to your client, because you need to learn the truth. So those are a few things, Chairperson, that have not been mentioned, but I'm covered by most of the input. Thank you so much.
Just thanks, Brian. It's never not paid by the VA to come and tell.
I don't even use VA.
Okay. Firstly, Chairperson, I think that there's a lot that I would have said, but it's covered already. And I'll ask you to share the views of the majority spoken here. I think the one thing that surprised me is that it's unusually consensus across all the parties. I've been chairing the committee now for 3 months. It's probably one of the most remarkably consensual overall position on any entity that's appeared before us. Which suggests that I think you and the management need to do better than you're doing. The sense I get also, and I agree with one of the people that across very well, my colleague, that there is sufficient recognition of the gravity of the challenges you are facing. I think that's what members are actually saying. And I agree. I think that's put very well by one of the members, my colleague in particular. I don't get that sense. For my sins, I chaired the Public Enterprises Committee from 2004 to about the middle of 2007. And I'm very struck by how a different set of people here, but it's almost like deja vu, the point Makosi makes again. There's been these turnaround strategies. What is so fundamentally new about it? It's new, but what is fundamentally new about it? Also, there's no sense of where this turnaround strategy fits in. This 90-day one into the long-term turnaround strategy. And what is the relationship between these turnaround strategies? What's the most crucial thing I think here is? Where's the show of the comeback? And I understand what we did in public enterprises. We have a shareholder compact that the government, the Minister of Public Enterprise, in that case the Minister of Finance now, negotiates with you. And then you come to an agreement. That shareholder compact in its entirety or in its gaps, it's some market-sensitive issues that we can't bring to Parliament. We use the shareholder compact as the framework to analyze progress for the state-owned entity. So it's similar, if you like, Madam Chair, to the strat plan of a department and its APB. That's the equivalent of a state-owned entity. So one of the things I don't think we need to discuss is that maybe we should take a decision that we write to the Minister and to yourself and say that we just raise it so that we want to see the shareholder contract finalized as soon as possible. In saying all of this, I'm bearing in mind that you can't lay the blame for the current challenges on the shoulders of the current leadership, both in terms of the board and management for SAA's problems. We've been here for a long while, so I don't know what you can say. Also, don't think what you can say. You see, if a state-owned company is not working properly, it means that the government and parliament must also take some measure of responsibility. So I think we, as Makosi and others have said, need to exercise our oversight more rigorously and more vigorously and more effectively. And I think those who are proposing that we call in the minister and yourself together, I think they're getting the right thing. I think that's something else we should agree on. But from the shareholder compact, how can we evaluate you if we don't have a headquarters? How do you get a department The government have a medium-term strategic framework for a five-year term based on the NDP and on the election program. Departments come in with strat plans and EPPs and budgets, obviously. So we look at what they're doing, how they're progressing. Now, we've got a shareholder compact. I understood that it's still the case. I don't know what's happening in public enterprises now. So we need a shareholder compact. I also think that at the time that I was chair of the committee, there was actually a shareholder management bill that Alex Owen was working on to define the respective roles of Parliament and the respective roles of the executive when it comes to an SOE. Because we also, from these colleagues, have to hold national treasury to account. I see two officials here, if I didn't, can you plead with you? Can you exercise more effective oversight over SAA? I think what the business is saying is that your answers are very glib with due respect to you. They're glib. I mean, there's nothing substantial. There's no clarity where you'll be a year from now. It is not your responsibility alone to do that. It is a responsibility of national treasury and also this parliament to assist. You know, the things you say, you can change the slides a year from now and come with the same things. The other thing, chairperson and the CEO that surprises me, I'm not sure what you expected from the committee. You don't need to have taken enough care and consideration in your preparations because everything's in the public domain. Did you really anticipate you would appear before this committee and people would not ask you about it? Now, whether they're accurate or not, I don't know. I am trying to be very cautious about what the media says. But if you were taking this parliament seriously, you'd have said, there are accusations that we cancel the deal at the last minute. Actually, not true, and this is the explanation. The accusation that, like you see, the thing is that every time we read about SAA over the last year, it's mostly about negative things. What would parliamentarians do if not raise that with you? So I would have thought you would have come here better prepared and say, these are some of the things that have been raised to confuse you a bit and so on, because I'm sure a lot of it or some of it is exaggerated. So you've got to deal with these issues. There have been all sorts of issues about CEOs and so on, and we read in the newspapers that meetings are monitored, and we don't know whether it's true or not, but surely, in fairness to Parliament, we will not be doing our jobs. Whether we're in the majority party or not, whether we are from the party, we have to do our jobs by the conventions and rules of Parliament. So it seems to me that I agree with those members, and also all of them in some other way are saying, we haven't prepared properly. I'm not sure what you expected us to do. Turn our blind eye. You see, if it's one or two incidents, it's fine. But there's been a plethora of stories. Plethora of stories. What did you expect us to do? Did you expect us to accept these issues? So I would have preferred, with respect to you, that you prepared appropriately. The thing that strikes me, colleagues, that hasn't occurred to me before, I'll try and angle, and outside this meeting, kind of, I want to speak to you about this. There are some MPs, me, I think, from KZN. We can't buy SA communicator and vice versa. There's no SA line. Some of us agree. The correct thing was done some years ago. I've been flying SA manual all the time. And somebody mentioned this the other day. And again today. I must tell you, I would say 90% of the time that I fly manual, they are at least 80% plus full. 2 Saturdays ago, I was tired of the 425 flight from SA Greenwich to it was over 60% full up on a Saturday afternoon flight. The thing that hadn't occurred to me, you see, I thought the reason Mango is doing so well is because it's a no-flow, so its costs of running it is obviously considerably less. You provide meals and so on. What members are saying I hadn't struck me before, that it can't simply be because they have a no-flow or low-cost carrier system. It must be the way they are managing and the way they are functioning operationally that must also be contributing to that. Mango is a remarkable success. And, Madam Chair, outside this meeting, I'd like to talk with you. I've been backing since July last year, right, to persuade Mango and Mrs. Harper here to allow MPs want to fly Mango to do so. I would fly British Airways when I have absolutely no choice. I think some people feel anyway that ideal, given our financial challenges, that when we're getting money from the fixtures, that we use it for the Mango flight. Because it is. So that's the thing that carries me. I agree with that. You know, the thing that occurs to me, it's not your issue, but perhaps you can help us, those who've been longer in Asia. Why is it that Comair, or is it Comair or British Airways that fly inside the country? We don't have that opportunity there. I don't have market issues and so on. Just one question. We're not interfering in market instabilities. I agree with Sandy. I also think what we should have done, and I reflect now, is we should have looked at the minutes of the last meeting where you appeared before the State-Owned Entities Committee, Public Enterprises Committee, and then picked up on some of those issues, because we're looking at it from a different... I don't know, but some of us would argue, obviously the President decides where he wants to put certain entities, and that's his right, we don't mention it. I don't want to imagine that there will be a time, given the huge workload with Treasury's guards, that you will be considered, if that's the word, to back to public enterprise. So I think, but I could be wrong, we don't know, that you are here temporarily while financial and legal challenges are addressed, and then there will come a time when you go back to public entity. If that is the case, we don't know, then is there some plan about when? Is it a 2-year plan, or are you building blocks towards that, and so on? So what I'm saying is that on the issue of Mango, I would like to speak to you to see how we understand that they have a credit card system. I've been having endless exchanges with Mrs. Harper and a representative, I don't want to mention his name here, on this matter, and hopefully there'll be progress. I'm told by October, Mango will provide, you see, the other difficulty with chairpersons and members of parliament to travel is that you often have to change things, as committee meetings change and so on. Now, Mango, I did speak to your official last time I spoke to you, he said they can allow for all of that. Then people have, those that have a British view, they are right. I don't think I have a question. Not being pejorative, not being judgmental. People can choose to. Those who want to travel from Parliament, at the moment, people pay ahead and then they get reimbursed by Parliament. Some people say they can't do that. So in short, can you help us with that and help yourselves? Then on the issue of the visa tourism, it just struck me that it's odd to put it in there as time is ahead. Personally, I'm not convinced. I don't know when the tourism visa new regulations are as detrimental as they may have. I don't know. I just think if it is, we have to change it, presumably. Find the right trade-offs and balances between concerns of home affairs and tourism. What I saw surprisingly yesterday or the day before, this is a small clip that said that the number of tourists in May this year were higher than last year. How do you see that clipping? It's a small clipping, I didn't say. So I don't know what that means. Then there are a lot of other things that... Sorry? it was a small thing about tourism figures up for me. Was it Cape Town? One of the papers in the last 48 hours, sometimes I read the paper of the previous week, because the members are giving me such a hard time. I don't understand if they're reading. So, I think I'll drop the other questions. Except to say that some of your answers are a bit dubious, actually, about the reason. That's why I agree with McCarthy to some extent. I don't think you're dealing with some of the fundamental challenges we've got. And they also revolve around governance, around labor relations, around management, around instability that's there. And those are things you must take responsibility for. You can't say they're structural. You can't say historical. Because this is, there's something, there's a historical context on it. But the substance of current things are partly your responsibility as a leadership. So, I also wanted to do something, I think, tricky is. You see, previously, the Cape Town Jazz Festival you funded, I remember the previous year when I was chair, was funding a golf tournament and so on. Presumably, you've reduced that dramatically. Then on the issue of jobs, now here it is, our government, and for full support of the majority party, is talking to the mining companies. There's an agreement signed on Monday, pleading with the steel companies that, you know, job loss should be a last resort. But you're a state-owned company. Now, I know what you can say. One of the reasons your competitors are doing better is that they have smaller staff. But they all deal with the same unions. And I know that you may have a case to reduce staff. And, you know, there are operational issues and so on. I don't know what we can do about some national presence engaged you, but to the extent at all, let me stress my word, to the extent at all it is necessary, then the management must show that it's tightening its own belt before it asks workers to tighten their belt. So we don't hear enough of what you are actually doing to reduce costs. Now, individual entities that aren't familiar with what I read about in the papers is that all members get paid high fees and so on. Obviously, people have stayed with trade, committed it with their productivity. And I know government is looking at a framework for remuneration of managers in the SOEs, board members, and so on. I don't know where that process is. It's all under the Public Enterprises Committee. But it would be nice if people came out and said, look, we're taking a sort of like pay, let's say, reduction or no increase for the next few years. Board members say, we're not taking high fees. Then you might have a case to engage with the unions around retrenchments. But if you don't, you're going to make yourself very, very vulnerable. Look, on the other issue, I'll drop it. So I'm not an expert, but it does strike me that though fuel prices have come down. The rand is weakened, so there's certain negative consequences. It also has positive consequences, presumably, because the tourists with dollars and euros and so on would be more likely to come to our destination. The Cape Town is one of the highest cities to go for money for value and heat and so on. And it's true because of Kruger National Park, the Drakensberg Mountains, in my own property, etc. So maybe more is going to come. Look, you know, you ask what I want to say, but I've gone on for too long. And my neighbors are going to get restless here. And they'll start sniggering at me and giving me a hard time. So I'll stop. Sorry? Already started getting restless. You have my members, I mean the people that really matter. And it doesn't include you too. Let me make it clear, Madam Chair. These who are dead tossed, okay? They've just come into the committee now. The previous two DA members have stopped. The two Gideonos, the two previous DA members were very good. That's why they took them away. They brought these two guys. We don't expect you to answer everything, but you get the sense. There's a remarkable degree of consensus here.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members of the committee, I'm going to try and give broader responses to the questions, so that I touch on almost every aspect of the business, so that there is a sort of an understanding that one, we do care about what is happening at SAA. And secondly, I know that the Honourable Chairperson has mentioned that it appears that we have not prepared well for the committee. I think on the side of my responses, one of the things that we had thought we should do, because the presentation that we are doing was guided, or the presentation that we have done was guided. Therefore, I then decided to put some kind of them ending remarks so that I'm able to deal with some of the issues that the Honourable Chairperson has alluded to in terms of what the media is saying. I'm going to start by saying that we have a general understanding of the complexity of the aviation industry. That is the first point. I think the board and one of the honourable members has asked the question if it is an interim board or not. We do not have information that we are an interim board. When we were appointed as a full board that takes decisions and that has an decision with an understanding of their fiduciary responsibilities. We have a skill set that fits the requirements of the airline. My apologies, Chairperson. I think I've forgotten to recognize the late arrival of one of our board members, Dr. Khan, who has been traveling, but he could not find a flight that would bring him here well on time. I forgot at the beginning to ask for an apology that he would join us a bit late. But when I say when I talk about the requisite skills that are needed in the aviation space, I mean, he's an aviation expert. And therefore, I think the spread of the skills within the board is there. I think also, I have to also say, the head-on strategy that was developed, it was number 9 strategy, or the 9th strategy. It was developed because of the issues that I think Honorable Makosi Khoza has alluded to. Probably, to shorten them, she's asked if we could talk about 5 pressing issues that are keeping the airline in ICU. Honorable Chairperson, I'm going to appreciate the fact that the honorable member knows that the SAA is in ICU, and you wouldn't have known if we did not bring it to the attention of everyone that understands where the airline is. I think it has been the duty of this board to ensure that out of the 8 strategies that were developed, this particular strategy was developed by and within SAA, by the employees of SAA, the leadership of SAA, in consultation with the board. But this is underpinned by a diagnostic review that was done by the Department of the Public Enterprises. That diagnostic review talks about legacy issues, it talks about historic agreements that were signed with the pilots. For the benefit of this company, the pilots at SAA are draining the airline in a big way. One of the areas that I can highlight here is that per annum, the pilots, in terms of salaries and packages, we actually pay almost 2 billion rand per annum to the pilots. Those are onerous agreements that exist, that we are trying our utmost to unbundle those agreements. But the way they are, you cannot touch the agreements of the pilots. You cannot. A classical example here, when I talk, we talk about the top 5 areas where the business is ailing. One is the pilot agreement that SAA has. It's called, we call them evergreen agreements. That is one. If a pilot is flying anywhere in the country with the family, whether you're a premium being passenger or not, the pilots will travel with the children and family for free, and they will use a seat that has been paid for. But the issue that we are dealing with, we have come up with a comprehensive strategy to deal with the issues of pilot agreements. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I'm going to give overview. The appreciation as well for all of us is that we are non-executive directors. We are not directors of the board. Non-executive means we meet 4 times a year, and we also meet from time to time when we have committee meetings. Therefore, the delegation is within the hands of the management to run the business. Now, running the airline that has historic and legacy challenges, that I think Honorable Linda will know better. The airline has always been bailed out by the government, cash, not in paper, not in guarantees. The airline in the past, before, I think probably before 1994, has always been bailed out by the government. The then government, even post 1994, government was giving cash injections into SAA and other state entities, but SAA is not getting cash from the government. We are dealing with a depleted balance sheet. That is something that concerns the board. It concerns the leadership. Depleted balance sheet in the sense that in 2000-2001, during the former CEO, erstwhile Coleman Andrews, sold the fleet that we had. SAA owned its own aircraft. That's the second highest cost driver at SAA. When he sold the aircraft that we owned, he then leased them back. It looked good on the bottom line. It looked very attractive for the board. I'm sure you would have given a bonus, a very good bonus, to a person who showed that we've done so well. Look at how our books look like. Look at the cash that is in the bank. And beyond that, 10 years later, during our tenure, those divisions are impacting on the current issues that we are faced with.
We then sunk the airline by doing so because the CFO has alluded to the fact that one of the highest cost drivers is the lease that we are paying for the aircraft. Those leases are paid in foreign currency. We are not paying them in South African rand. Therefore, the fluctuations are affecting us. That is a legal issue. It's not a domestic matter that those aircraft were sold and were leased back and they were paying for that. The other thing, even if we negotiate lower lease rates, it still affects us. And Honorable Jefferson, this board applied its mind and sat down and decided on aircraft leasing company owned by South African company. We have started those discussions because we are not seeing that whatever we are doing, cost containment, anything we are doing, is it going to yield the desired result of an airline that can be self-funding, that is not going to be relying on government bailouts. When I say bailouts, guarantees, because it's a paper, it's not money. And when we get these guarantees, which we appreciate because they make us to receive the going concern so that we are able to hold the ADMs and do all the necessary things, when we receive those guarantees, we go out to the market to look for money. The cost of finance is the third element that makes the airline to be in an ailing condition. I like your example, Honorable Member, to say the ICU. We see that. We don't sleep because of what we see, but what has still happened is that because we don't sleep, we pay our bills. We don't keep our bills. We pay high lending costs. And I don't want to say figures, AFSA collects very good figures from us on monthly basis. We pay good high premiums for AT&S. I'm sure we know AT&S. We also AT&S is aircraft control.
Oh, yes.
We pay very, very high premiums there. The good thing is that we are servicing all our debts under the current conditions. The other larger cost, I mean, in comparison, if you look at other airlines, Honorable Chair, and this is going to lead me to the whole of state aviation policy framework that we are hoping that today, if we leave it as a homework, we'll be able to keep it for the next engagement and understanding that it is a wish that we engage with the committee and engage SAA further from this. The whole of state aviation policy framework that we came up with when we developed this long-term turnaround strategy is that we have the government department operating in silos. This is part of the preparation that I made as my conclusive remarks, that the visa requirements, the lending fees, AT&S, the Department of Transport offering and giving licenses to competing airlines, are negotiating bad lending slots, supporting BRICS, doing flying to Beijing, China, supporting India as well as with part of supporting the government and the government agenda is understand we belong to the government. We do not decide certain things that are going to be in opposition with what the government and the ruling party of the day is saying we should do. We are saying about supporting those groups. The decision we make is unusual. I think my opening remark on the strategy that we developed was saying we are going to do business at FAA in an unusual way. I can safely say, Honorable Chairperson, when we analyzed the Beijing-China route, we discovered that we are losing 30 million rand per month. If it was my business, Honorable Shivambo, I would have decided the next day that to cut the route. But there is an approval process when you are losing 30 million rand a month. You go to the shareholder and say, we are losing on this particular route. You had approved it. We made our calculations. We thought we would make money. And also it supports the developmental agenda. But when you discover that
this route, part of the route, sometimes when you develop a new route, you are not profitable immediately because there is capital that is required for an infrastructure process when you develop a route up until it becomes profitable. But the highlight of that route was that South Africa benefited immensely. One, tourism benefited. Department of Trade and Investment benefited because we've got so many investors from China, South Africa, China, country to country benefit. We looked at it in that positive area. It has a developmental impact in the country. But can we achieve transfer mechanism? Can we then, through our shareholder, get a permission to say, because tourism is benefiting? Let SAA get a few, rents and banks to support SAA because out of this route they are losing 30 million rent, but the country in general has made over 90 billion rents in terms of the economic development and tourism. I was in pain the other day, I was struggling and I said this to somebody very senior at the Department of Tourism. He was actually engaging and he was talking and he opened his laptop, he showed me the upward trend on how they are making good money as a business. Then I said again, whole of state aviation policy framework dialogue, where the Minister of Tourism, maybe not the Minister, but the government, talks to one another so that there is support for the airline because we facilitate trade. I don't think we exist to be profitable. We at least exist to break even for all the conditions under which we operate. But what we see, we say, if we don't talk to it, in fact, the Department of Home Affairs, recently with the new visa requirements, we denied 400 people in 1 month in August. 400 people were denied departing to the serious destination because they did not have all the required visas for their trips. Now that we don't know how much has that affected SAA. We still go to get those figures from the executives. I also want to highlight that as part of the dialogue that I'm talking about, we do feel that if we have that kind of a platform, we can be able to maybe highlight issues like, for instance, other airlines. One, without mentioning those airlines, other airlines own airports. Other airlines co-own wells and jet fuel plants, if I may. Other airlines have tax leaves. Ethiopian Airlines does not pay certain taxes. So even if you sell a ticket, you have to still, in South Africa, you still have to pay the 15% of the tax ticket. You still have to do normal. And we contribute over 9 billion rand into the country's GDP. But also we pay over 6 billion or 1.6 billion towards the receipt of revenue. And we don't deserve those payments.
We want to make a point of order. Could the chairperson explain which question she is answering? I ask specific questions. I expect specific answers. Could you please give front to answering questions?
Okay, I'm answering the first.
No, hang on. I'm chairing here. You don't have to respond to him. That is you. You're right, David, to raise that view. You're giving us, as I said it, an overall perspective, an approach, strategic reflection. Now, on the specific questions, obviously, we will come to them. And just like every other person who appears before this committee, you'll be obliged, you or your team, to answer the questions. That's what Parliament's about. So, you will have to answer the questions. The only question that's legitimate has to be answered. There's no rule in Parliament that prevents somebody answering. You will have to answer. So when you're managing your time, it's 12 or 5. We are very prompt. We start at 10. Latest we start 3 minutes past 10, and we finish at 1. But until I am free, if members want to stay beyond 1 o'clock, I'm cool. I've got a meeting at 1 o'clock today. So you've got a meeting. All right. So if the minority want to stay slightly beyond 1, chairperson, then if you're available, we'll stay beyond 1. But can we manage this? We're getting a drift away, you're going. And I'm sure members will also reply to that, because we've heard similar things before from a range of actors and so on. But I think you should give us another 5 minutes or so of this. And if you answer the specific question, they will give more concrete substance to your overall strategy. Because the overall objectives, the overall approach, the overall strategy has only meaning if there's answers to the other questions people have raised. Because that has become abstract, as you would have to agree. So we have to deal with the abstract and the concrete. Let's give you another 5 minutes to carry on listening, and then answer the specific question, and then there's more space you can come back to dealing with your overall approach.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The public opinion does matter, and I think there is an appreciation at the SAA that things that are in the public domain need to be responded to. My response is into the leadership instability at SAA. First and foremost, we learned at SAA that we learned through the media that there were some contracts that were not done in the right way, and SAE was paying for pilferage that was supposed to be costing less, was supposed to be costing 4 million, but SAE was 4 million, another SAE was paying 17 million per month. And obviously that was in the public space, and we responded to that through asking questions inside the airline, and we dispatched that then. Destabilizes the leadership from the perspective of the CEO that was there at that time. And there was a process that we entered into, and there were consequence management. And therefore, if you say the airline is an ICU, we continue to lose money because you find that the CEO, because that is within the delegation of the CEO again to sign a contract of 17 million rand, but had that followed the right process, if you ask those questions, you become unpopular as the leadership of the airline. Therefore, the instability that the context that which we spoke about in our slide was that if you change the CEO, destabilizing the implementation of the turnaround strategy that we are hopeful is going to be successful. One of the things that differentiates this strategy is its implementation. All the other strategies were developed and paid for and competently, but the implementation part has always been a challenge. But we see that when we put a dashboard, that makes us at the board, being away from the airline on day to day, being able to say, okay, we are on the red here, we are on the green. The dashboard showed us exactly when management is in terms of the implementation of the strategy. That's what makes it stands out and makes it different from the rest of the other strategies that are in the shell. But what also was important, Honorable Chair, with this particular strategy was that we took other things that were on these other strategies that were in the shell that were gathering data before our time. And we said, what is relevant? What is still relevant and that could be also used in the new strategy? And it is owned by the employees of SAA, and it was workshopped with SAA in consultation with the rest of the stakeholders of SAA. The issue of Emirates, I am on record, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission. The Honourable DA member wrote to me and asked me to answer questions about the Emirates deal. And my response to that was that the board received the proposal Emirates in January. As normal, the management was running with the process. But it must also be appreciated that also on record, we have a relationship with Emirates. It wasn't a new relationship that we were going to enter into it. But unfortunately, we've got compliance boxes that we have to follow. But also, we only come in on an invitation by the members, by the representative of the airline, if the issue of Emirates fell within their own space dedicated to them. We were not going to be part of the Emirates transaction, but we needed to ensure that they are all approval processes that are entered into. And this response was sent to Parliament, to the Honourable Member of Parliament, regarding the Emirates. The rest of the other things pertaining to Emirates have been concluded. And again, when we conclude certain decisions, we have to do them through a board sitting where everyone is able to take those kind of decisions. The second part is the Bengo and its profitability as a local airline. The structure is
like... My point of order is this. I did raise the question on Emirates.
the chairperson has now begun to answer the question and is moving on to another question, but in fact not answer my question. I'm very happy to you to remind the chairperson of my questions, and what I would like answered. And my question with respect to the chairperson was, did the chairperson receive a call from President Jacob Zuma or any other person representing the shareholder, and did the chairperson instruct that the deal should be terminated at the last moment as is alleged in the public domain? Yes or no? Answer the question.
Chair, is this a commission of inquiry or what is happening? Because I don't think we should reduce this committee to those kind of engagements.
So we've allowed these interjections, but I think in this specific circumstances, allow me to use my discretion. Saying to you, if at the end of all the inputs, you haven't got, or anybody here hasn't got a sufficiently clear answer, we can then ask the case to reply. If she says it's not appropriate for her to reply, we give them advice and we can find another forum in which to secure the answers. Having said that, I saw two hands going up. One, Makosi, and two, Tandi, and then third one.
Chair, I just wanted to find out what is the relevance of the question in terms of the agenda that we received for today. My understanding was that we are getting the briefing from the South African Airways on their turnaround strategy and performance. And I'm failing to understand what is, how does that relate to the turnaround strategy and performance. Some of us are not that smart.
Yeah.
But more rational.
Andy, David, and Floyd. Jenkins has just come in. But for now, just actually hear what's happening. And if necessary, I'll call him and give me some advice. Because I'm not sure what I'm going to do in a situation like this.
Chair, actually, I support what you have said. Because in the past, the committee is a very open committee, engaged, and, I just want to make a small matter. One small principle that is unprincipled can destroy the whole intention of wanting to have engagement. I'm saying, if a member poses a question and needs an answer, how you interact in the language you use sometimes creates unnecessary problems. You know, the posturing and that itself cannot create a disrespectful environment for other human beings. You know, that's the point I want to make. I don't believe that because the questions were not on the agenda, they must not be responded to. Right? And it's also within the framework of what can be answered and what cannot be answered at a particular point in time. But I'm appealing to you to ask, you know, that was not answer, you know, that posture that seeks to intimidate an individual. It's unnecessary, I'm saying. But answering questions fine. I mean, that's what we do. We ask questions, they get answered. If there's no sufficient answer, it can be deferred to an age, whether in or verbal and so on. But really, we don't have to have a polar environment unnecessarily. So we have never had it for any way in this community before. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to proceed along the lines that you proposed, as long as we remind the person what the common language usage of reply is, which is reply to the question.
I was saying, you know, in your attempt to call David to order, you delayed for a very long time. You must answer all of them. So that she was still answering, and I'm sure they're going to make a difference themselves. So that's not with them. They don't get the answers on all the questions.
Right, Hillary, you're on the floor, you projected. From the body as well as for you.
Okay, I want to propose that it looks like majority of us, we are not convinced and happy with the engagement and the presentation as a whole. So I want to propose that maybe we should give the chairman and the team an opportunity to go back and prepare according to our expectations and coming. And then go some way.
Yeah. All right. Look, there is one point that I think it bears reflection. The point Randy is making to all members. Firstly, there's been a remarkable degree. Look, let me explain, Chairperson. You presumably have been before the Public Enterprises Committee. Committees are partly shaped by the character of the chemistry that the collective, even across the opposition's divides, secure. And we have always encouraged a free flow. People have previously, some of these ANC members interrupted and said, you're not being provided clarity, it's not addressed to you specifically. It's addressed to all people in the PM. And there's nothing unusual about David putting it as a right. However, it is something to be said for the way we raise questions. The aim is not to demean people. That is wrong. The board chair didn't apply for this job and said, I want to be the board chair. She was appointed by the government. When you hold people to account, as far as I know, it's both the shareholder government representative, whichever department it is, and the board chair and CEO. And I think that is right, that we should not do that because it does encourage its tone and style also, not just addressing one specific member of one specific, all of us. It applies to everybody. So I think let things flow, and then at the end we see, and then we seek advice about how we proceed legally. But I'm bound by the rules and norms of the parliament, and we have to abide by that. Under the rules and norms set. Thank you. Hewitt will have the chance at the end. Anybody else wants to follow up and say, on new issues, because we're out of time. We're going to have a follow-up meeting. Now, those of us who rule on the ladies then, there is another option to think about your person. You might want to say, and I'm going to prescribe to you, that you'll come back on that question at the next meeting, between the consultant lawyers and whoever else. And that's a perfectly reasonable thing to say. But let's come back to it. But we cannot just keep answering questions. I mean, this is Parliament, it's, and we can't treat any differently from any other. And also, whether we come from the smallest party or the biggest party, we're all at the same right of asking questions, as far as I know. And it's not for me, I don't like a lot of the questions asked, but what can I do about it? You change the rules, I'm just a mere chairperson here. So I'm not detecting, because I'm trying to check it. There's no such thing as a chair suddenly deciding, because I don't like the question somebody's asking, before they're not going to be allowed to ask it. You will tell me whether it's constitutionally sound to ask the question. Good. And once things are in the public domain, we have to deliver on these issues. There's a lot of the perceptions are going to persist. So in short, I've got no choice. Frank will advise me ultimately. For now, I'm suggesting a way out. I think a reasonable way out is already beginning to emerge. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman. I think on the issue of the elderly deals, I think because of the sensitivity of the MOU and the content thereof, I am going to, with the permission of the Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, to say we can prepare for the committee for the next round to give maybe more detail and what it is that was intended. But I can assure the committee that the board and management were aligned in terms of what we think we can benefit from signing the MOU. But we wanted it to be in favor of SAA. At the same time, we wanted to tick all the compliance boxes. We did not want to just wake up the next day when we received the memorandum of understanding on the 2nd of May and on the 4th of May we signing. We wanted as well to apply our minds to say what is the content, what does it say, how is it going to affect the operation of the airline under the current ailing condition. We are operating in a particular space, and I think in the previous board meeting last week we concluded and the processes are moving in a way that we are happy with. The issue of jet fuel is one of the highest cost drivers. I think I'm on number four if I remember well. It does concern us that we are paying a lot of money on jet fuel. We do get a sense from management that there is nothing we can do because the prices are regulated and therefore it's very difficult to negotiate. But we set part of the whole of state aviation policy dialogue was to engage the likes of the SFF, which is one of the state entities, to say, can they assist us to buy on a larger scale, and because they don't have to be profitable in the state entity, we could negotiate maybe a reduction of whatever cents that we could. I remember that, I did that process, but again, what happens is that when you introduce new things, the end user gets affected because you are introducing change in how the business is being done. Now, the complexity of our business is that you have people that are assigned to do certain things that they've been doing for the past 81 years, if I may, because we are 81 years. In fact, this is the 82nd year since the establishment of the airline. And therefore, when you introduce new things, you become unpopular, you are called all names, you are associated with certain people, and the media create certain stories, and those stories become public stories that appear to be true. The question that is unpopular that I ask Honorable Chair is, if the jet fuel is so expensive and we have an old fleet that we call test gazelles, and the old order that was ordered, the fleet that was ordered in 2002, which basically we are still receiving those aircraft. But those aircraft are old generation engines. Now today, are those engines going to be this more relevant? If the Mercedes was bought in 2002 and then you're receiving it today, the Mercedes is really outdated. Now, part of what we're trying to do is to reconfigure that old order to say, let's get new generation engines. But the question that we ask that makes this board that is seen to be in low leadership is to say, Comair operates old fleet. Mango takes second-hand aircraft from SAA. Mozambican Airlines operates the oldest fleet. If Mozambican Airlines buy jet fuel in South Africa, Mango buys jet fuel in the same country, same price, same everything, old aircraft. Why SAA continues to bleed? We operate in the same highly competitive space. We pull out of London route from Cape Town to London. British Airways puts two aircraft from Cape Town to London, where we pull out and say we are losing money. They operate their own fleet. A question that we, in our four times a year in meetings with the management, why are they making profit when we are losing money? It's a question that is fair from the board to ask the management. There are many other questions that we ask. Why is this bottle of water costing the airline four times more than what Mango would pay for or what SAA would pay for? Again, maybe we are used to receiving cash all the time, or we were used to receiving, because the management has been at SAA for quite some time, or the end users, or the middle management has been there for quite some time. Now, if you're talking cost containment and also trying to introduce cost compression into a culture, it is a culture that is difficult to maintain by the rest of the people at the receiving end. We are negotiating with AFRA. I think honorable member here can talk to them. AFRA is an African airline association which talks to the continent, and therefore, I think for better scale in terms of the acquisition of jet fuel, we are negotiating. I think there will be about 5 to 10% reduction. He will talk to them because he's more confident in that area. If you look at Ethiopian Airlines, they don't pay certain taxes. But it's the government that says this is our national carrier. Again, if you fly to Ethiopia or if you apply to get a license to participate or to fly within the country, you are told certain rules. The government of Ethiopia is very protective of its space and its country. There are rules that you never cross. It's either you fly from wherever you come, you drop the people at Owen's Cabo, you go where you come from. This is what Europe does to us. We only go as far as where we drop people in Europe. We are not allowed to do that in the network in Europe. We don't have, if we owned SAA, we would negotiate better arrangements. But we cannot impose that, and we cannot go to the Department of Transport and say, when you allow Emirates to fly to South Africa, don't allow them to take people from Cape Town, from Devon to Cape Town, or from Cape Town to PE, or from wherever. we cannot say that because they are the regulator. It's a highly regulated environment. And therefore, those are the discussions that we are hoping that with the support of our shareholder, we can be able to have those discussions maybe at IMC level or with the shareholder leading those discussions to say, in order for a national carrier not to be wished away, these can be done and these can be negotiated. On the cargo and defense, that can be answered because, again, the delegation is to the management. Some of the things that don't need the board, we hear about them, like yesterday we heard something else about airships and food. But the Honorable Board Member and next week will talk to them. But it must be understood because of the complexity of the business. It's like when you order something for airships, you find that there is a truck coming in to deliver the, whatever that has been ordered. We as the board are not at airships at this particular time to see that the stock is offloaded. And in the bigger scheme of things, you hear certain things. As we were dealing with the issue of the former CEO, we discovered a number of things that had happened. We dealt with those things to the extent that we were ravaged by the media in many fronts and in many ways. But we did not necessarily say we are going to be affected by what was being said, but we were focusing on the business at hand because we are saving our subsidiaries, we are saving the airline. Airships is our subsidiary, NEM is our subsidiary. One honorable member of this committee, I think, is gone out. She spoke about Airlink. Airlink does not belong to SAA. Airlink is its own board. It belongs to the Department of Public Enterprises. We are not together. So I think that engagement will allow us to be able to deal with some of those things. Shareholder compact, honorable chairman, it does exist. We have shareholder compact. There were certain areas where the board needed to satisfy itself in order to sign as well back to the minister. We are governed and measured on the KPA, KIs that are in the shareholder compact. I don't think there's any board that can operate outside that. But we also, as a board, we met last week to conclude it. We wanted also to ensure that it is aligned to the MOI because there is an MOI that also did talk to the shareholder compact. And management gave us their input as well as also their comments on the shareholder compact. It does exist and I'm sure the National Treasury should be getting it maybe before the end of this week. Therefore, there is no way that we can operate without that. I think we have an appreciation of the challenges that we have, and we also have an appreciation of the fact that we are getting these guarantees which are meant to support us, but indeed, it can never be easy and it can never be enough. When we developed this strategy, we thought it in fact was built on an understanding that we will get a cash injection of 8.5 million to deal with the debt that we had. And one of the things that keeps sinking the airline is to keep on going to the market to get the money, to ask for the money. That cost, finance cost, is exceedingly high for us to be able to run the business in a fair environment and in a profitable way. Therefore, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission, if I have missed some of the things, and I think we can have another opportunity to also to talk to the issues that have been raised. One of the honorable members said, we're funding chairs, we're funding sports, we're sponsoring that. Again, the issue of delegation. The board sometimes don't know that somebody has gone to a golf tournament and donated money, because it's within that delegation. But when we see it coming, or when we hear about it, we deal with it. We've closed sponsorships. And again, when some of the people come to us asking for those sponsorships, we do say as a board, because of the nature and the precarious conditions under which we are operating, we cannot sponsor kids. We cannot sponsor, predominantly we used to sponsor sports, rugby, all those. I don't know whether we still do, but in as far as we know, we don't make sponsorships of jazz festivals and sponsorships. If we do, the ex-CEO will guide us and will take the necessary action. And again, we'll take those actions knowing that we probably have to issue a moratorium around the issues of sponsorship. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
One or two things that occurred to me you haven't covered. One is, obviously there are sensitive issues, but is there any prospect that you might be reducing staff retrenchment? Secondly, apart from being a low-frills airline, what is it that, and apart from using old planes, what is it that makes it such a success? Certainly of the in Cape Town for Mangrove. Then there are other questions. Let's deal with them very quickly, then, because they're not new questions, they're old questions. Then I will ask members to get clarity on questions they feel they have and just add it to the office.
On the issue of staff reduction, it has been there and had for quite some time, Honorable Chairperson, and it's not starting only today or during the new tenure of this of the board. So my apologies. When we talk about the staff reduction, we are not hoping to retrench anyone. We are dealing with maybe we are actually something that was part of the turnaround strategy, where people would take maybe voluntary severance packages, not necessarily to force anyone to go, but also we are looking at. Part of supporting the state is that the developmental mandate requires of us to support the government. But again, we are saying, what is the impact of it? And if you look at the commercial sustainability of the airline, what should be and what can be? And therefore, we are really very careful there, and we are not hoping that there will be casualties in terms of people that will be retrenched. But that is an area of urgency on it. He's going to, I think, respond to, but what we know, we provided for every packages for those that want to leave. That, especially because of the age, if they feel that they are ready to retire, but those that have not participated in the program are not too sure how many can be affected, but we are in it at the moment. The issue of the mango and the roots, I'm going to, and the issue of airships, I think the Honourable board member of SAA, Mrs. Quinlan, can respond to some of the questions. And also, she's the audit chairperson, and therefore, I'm sure audit and risk chairperson. I think she can also allude to the areas where I did not touch. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We are happy that Lengo, as part of SAA, is doing very well. And we would also attribute that to SAA being the subsidiary of SAA. However, having said that, information in 2006 was formed by SAA, and it was properly capitalized by SAA. It's different from SAA, which came from Transnet and was not properly capitalized from the beginning. So a system that was started from the right footing from the beginning. The other reason why Mango is doing well is because of the other costs that are favorable to Mango and are incurred by SAA. So basically, in a way, Mango is partly subsidized by SAA. I will mention one example in respect to the roads. Mango is leasing the aircraft from SAA, the old aircraft from SAA. And SAA will have leased the same aircraft from the third party outside. SAA will be paying, for example, 100,000 to the outside company. And then Mango in turn would pay 75,000 to SAA. So which means that there is that subsidy that SAA is giving to Mango. And there are also contracts that are between SAA and Mango, which basically are favorable for Mango. Like for instance, the issue of the Belly space where SAA, regardless of whether there is cargo that is being transported on behalf of SAA by Mango. The agreement between SAA and Mango is such that such amount is paid regardless of that cargo. And therefore, there are also a lot of things like that which basically SAA is subsidizing Mango. one question that we have that we are still looking into is to say, would mango be able to survive independently without SAA in view of all these favorable contracts and subsidies that mango is receiving? And also having said that, we are not complaining because mango is our own formation. I will go to SF, and specifically the question that was asked by Honorable Floyd Shivago. He was asking about the internal procurement with specific reference to food, where food is made in Denmark. And as the chairperson said, the delegation that comes to the board is 100 million and above. So which means that if the procurement process, which basically is also something that sometimes is failing us, the procurement process is saying you will take out to tender anything that is more than, say, 500,000. And then now there is a tender for food, and it goes out. And we have learned only yesterday that there was food, there was a tender that went up to the sector of food. And SF, being our subsidiary company, also did tender. And because of the procurement process, looking at price and technicality and all of the things, the boxes that were ticked in respect of this, then that tender was provisionally awarded to an outside company, which is something that should have been done by SF. But we are also looking into that. So what I am saying, sometimes we learn these things the same as any other member is learning about them because of the level of performance it doesn't have to us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm just trying to check if we are okay with this. I am a little concerned that some of the questions that the board members are answering are questions that under normal circumstances would be expecting the CEO, because they're operational, they're not strategic. And the level of detail we are getting from the board members, that which we are not getting from the management is worrying. It is worrying. Maybe because I've won this case before as a CEO, I would worry if my chair knew more about operational issues than myself, because I'm the one that is in charge. I operate in the operational space. And as a chair, maybe it's something that maybe the chair can assist us with, because it is worrying. I mean, out of that, the chair was obviously answering all those strategic questions. Like, I mean, I was very wary. In fact, thank you very much. You actually outlined a lot of questions. You clarified a number of cost drivers that when we are interrogating the documents, I'm going to be zooming into some of the areas that you have mentioned to see whether our turnaround strategy is speaking to what you've already raised as the cost drivers and what we are doing with that, and I appreciate it. But it does concern me that the board is very much involved with operational matters.
The same thing comes to my head. The management seems to be like dormant at the moment, and the board members are answering questions. It is rather surprising, but you don't need apologetic. You're bound by corporate norms and the corporate, I don't know why it's quiet, but look, we can't be over prescriptive either, okay? Yeah, no, hang on. Can we quickly, now, because we're running out of time, I need some direction. It's 30 minutes to 1. Do members want to continue beyond 1 o'clock? Yeah, no, I'm chairing. I am asking you a question, which is a procedural one. Do you want to stay beyond 1, or is it because we've got, like, another meeting will take place as reasonably soon. It won't happen now. Right. Can we please behave now? It's 13 to 12 minutes. You're wasting my time and the meeting's done. I'm saying to you, maybe what we do is, because we are meeting shortly again, by shortly I mean in the next quarter, because we have two committee meetings left, and then we'll follow up on some issues. So bearing that in mind, I think we'll talk about 5 past 1. Now, can we please get a few questions, and you respond to all of them? I know David and Hannah, Tandy, and our colleague in Hong Kong, and Floyd.
Can I urge on the questions that were asked earlier? This is
no, no, then I'll respond to them. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, and Pierre wants to speak here.
Yes, on procedure. Isn't this guy the board way answer it? I thought I asked this, they stopped to answer it. We had the other questions to management. So if maybe we allow them to do that before we take another number of questions.
Oh, are you still handing over? Oh, okay, right, fine.
Thank you.
But can you please zone in more precisely now and quickly on specific questions after I'll send?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My apologies to the members. I thought because we were part of the development of the strategy, there was no way we could not understand what is happening in the business. I think as Honorable Makosi said, do we understand the complexity of that particular business we are in? We are there because we are supposed to do certain things, and part of our oversight responsibility is to ensure that the business goes back into profitability or at least break even. But then we have to do that with a great understanding of the complexity of aviation as a business. When I was answering, I started answering because Honorable Chairman has said it appears we have not prepared, and it appears we are not even making remarks as the board, and it looks like we just came here unprepared. Indeed, I did not do any opening remarks, and we just zoomed into the turnaround strategy, which was the 90-day action plan, and then the CEO kicked off. With a few things that I've said, I was opening for them to then respond to the issues of finances, financial planning, marketing, fashion that have been spoken about, cost reduction and people reduction that Honorable Shramo spoke about, cargo business. We don't know that information. There is more that we don't know that you don't know that we don't know. When I say there is more, we cannot talk about anything that is within 1,000 to 100 million. We don't know that. This tender that the Honorable Board member is talking about is 85 million. It has been given to German companies to cater for our nation. We don't know that because it's not within our delegation. Now, should we reduce the delegation or not? What should we do? So we are not suggesting that when we say things, we are not saying things to open up for public scrutiny, but we are saying things so that there is greater understanding that because of the size of the business, we operate globally, and we continue to say, how can we make profits? We continue to say, how can the company be run in a more profitable way? But in the process of doing that, as the board, we get rubbish into the leader to say, why did you sign the Emirates deal? Whether you compliant with the process or not, we get the media saying certain things, or the chair continues to fight with the executives. We don't fight with the executives, but ask questions. We ask questions, why is Comair profitable? They are using old aircraft, buying the same jet fuel. Why are we not profitable? It's a dialogue. Then continue to engage our executives. We want them to account. And if our way of doing things is wrong, we would be happy to take guidance and also understand that we should continue to allow people to cap losses of 4 million per annum and pay 17 million. Thank you. The acting CEO will then get into responding to other questions.
Thank you, Jim.
I'm just like, in the response to the chair, clarify that you have got a subsidiary which deals with the food, which is Asians. How do you a tender to German company? I'm sure the CEO will know. What would be the logic of giving a tender to a German company when you're going to stop that deal?
Can you have a precise answer, please? To the point.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to refer this to our Chief Procurement Officer because this is a procurement matter.
Where's the procurement officer?
Yes, precise.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I would like to say a business deal is done by the business and submitted to procurement, that a procurement process starts to happen, and all we did was we followed a due process, and by following a due process we looked at the respective issue that we went out to tender on, which were to form the basis of awarding that particular tender. Unfortunately, I think it was rather to be taken too late. After a procurement process has gone through, we needed then not to try and change the process that would have it followed. But by and large, we could have stopped the process at business case level.
What is he saying? Is he confirming that it's true? They gave...
We don't know, what's not sure what you're
they
saying.
They gave a German company this thing, and you want your own subsidiary that deals with... You are producing this thing, but you are giving somebody else to do those things.
That's worse than that. We also want to know. Then what happened? What does this company do with all its staff and what not? That is there. And the people that are there, what happens to them?
Listen, I actually think, look, we've got to be fair to the chair. I would like to suggest that you can't be your community colleagues. Marcos, don't disguise me here, right? Frank's going to help me here. You see, I would like to plead with him that you can't leave things hanging in the air. You can't say we're going to come back and then deal with these issues and answer them in writing. I would like to plead, we haven't done this before, which alone shows, Chairperson, it's the first time we've had this situation in 15 months. And I want to repeat, I don't think, with due respect to you, that you've managed this process in your initial inputs. I never said you didn't make any remarks. I mean, it doesn't matter ultimately who makes the remarks. The chair of the board can say, okay, two sentences and hand over. It's anticipating what the committee is likely to ask. And to do that doesn't require rocket science. You can see many issues in the public domain and so on. So I also view that partly the issues are too many for you to reply to. But if your management of the initial input and the answering was a bit more employed to help. So I'd like to plead with members that we stay for another 15 minutes and give them clearer direction on what it is we expect at the next meeting. Now, Bridget is not here, right? Alan, you will do the minutes and organize it. Any other leader, Chair? I think we should write to the board and the CEO and say, look, the next time you come, in October sometime, please, and we'd like the minister to be here. So, having said that, I'm saying now it is 4 minutes to 1. This meeting will end at 19 minutes past 1. Now, can you reply clearly and precisely, my friend, to be there? Okay, to the question raised. And I would like to take our colleague Mpankwa, because he hasn't answered the question. Okay, so I think we'll take you first in fairness. We come to you, David. The thing is, I've now extended 15 minutes. Don't harass me, please. Right. Thank you, Chair. What they are, and then we negotiate with you.
Thank you, Chair. All I'm saying is, in public sector procurement, we start by putting together a business case, which is the main driver of the end procurement process. So procurement is right at the end of the process. And as long as we get a business case that gives justification as to why we need to go out to tender, we then follow the due process, and this is exactly what we did in this instance. And we followed the due procurement process, and the outcome obviously did not favor our own subsidiary, resulting in us awarding the tender to the German company.
Chair, if I may, Chair.
Can you add?
Yes, I just want to add and provide a fair context. This tender was specific to servicing the lounge in Oman. It was not for taking away the services of airships from SAA. It was just a single tender, which was confined into providing catering services to the lounge in OST. Airships is still providing services, Oliver Tambo, International. Airships is still providing services to SAA on board our flight at all other lounges in the West. So this one, we're opening a new lounge. We have driven, some of you travel through over Campo, we've seen that we have it's just a small lounge at this point in time, but we're waiting for opening up our lounge. So we put it up on tender, and that's what happens on that particular case. It doesn't mean that the whole services of Asia has been outsourced to the German company. I thought it's important to provide that context.
Okay, colleague Mwanga. Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Okay. We have got replies now. What am I saying? Thank you. Yeah.
Can't we have a proper session
right.
And defer all the things to the next chairperson? Because we really need to do justice to some of these things.
Okay.
And I think we also want to hear more from this executive. So my firm proposal is that let's call it a day. And
let's have a session. On the matter of what Inky is proposing, comment on that only. Let's take Colin beforehand. Colin, as you discussed the process issue, you've got content issue. I think your content issue will come to process.
All right. I agree with the process issue, so I'll discuss that one for sure. The second one is that really when it comes to this, that the feeling that we're going nowhere slowly. That's the honest feeling. This question, all of these questions were asked when we had a meeting at when Public Enterprises and the Portfolio Committee had a meeting with the board last year. And these questions were asked last year in November, sometime. And we got the same responses. And 8 months later, we are still not turned around. We're still facing the same direction. Back then, the chairperson, the CEO, yes, we haven't turned around. Maybe we're turning around slowly. The acting CEO was Nicholas Hagenot. That seemed to know everything that was done. We had the answers. We're happy. We're so impressed. We clapped our hands to you later. 8 months later, we talked about the same issues about fuel and all that, another question. It's going on. We must also say yes, we've been fed by a great company with South African can cook. How do you answer that? Look at it. It doesn't matter whether you have a tender or whatever process, but it's wrong. Sorry, Chairman.
I'm dealing with protest. Pinky's got a proposal. Now, let's take it in the order in which they initially appeared, to be fair. It would David and Tandy, and then the others would come in. And Dilly hasn't spoken, now Pinky Lady goes third, and then the rest of you. And my sister there, two sisters there, right, for you. The order, and then you'll get your chance, right? Very quickly. On protest, please.
Chair, you have asked for inputs on process. I think we're dealing with a disaster of such a monumental scale that I would differ. I think that we should use the time available to us while SAA are here to further probe SAA. We are still unanswered questions. The chairperson has still not said whether she will resign and provide us with reasons why she won't.
Okay, Chair.
I don't know how we can prioritize that particular one.
Yeah, on process issues, Chair, I want to make a recommendation. First, I want to recommend that the Portfolio Committee on Transport should be invited to our next meeting so that we can come and discuss the NGS issues. That's part of trying to resolve the challenge that has been presented to us here today. Two, I also want to suggest that we invite National Treasury to discuss whether is it possible to give a final equity injection, but also to get guarantees from the board that in an event that the Treasury says yes, that will help with the general strategy. Three, I also want the board to prepare on the comparative advantage that they will have when the strategy is implemented so that we can have a discussion around that issue, especially when we look at the international networks that are there. And last year, I don't want us to raise issues in the next week and then it just leads to anarchy. So I thought we were going to forward those suggestions so that when we go for ACRA, is it possible, Chair, that we also invite ACRA? Mm-hmm. I suggest that our team, Sean and everybody else, pick up the issues. That is so that the side issues must not form part of the core discussion. Because we want to turn around. We don't want to. So, if you get another question.
All of the way, whether I fly to the area or whoever, doesn't it? The mandate of the standing committee was to look into the turnaround strategies, but also the financial thing of SAD. I suggest that we go to SAD and get all the relevant manager to come and account on, because the board and management are far apart financial value. Sometimes the board knows, sometimes the board does not know. Like, there are lots of things happening there which the board is not aware. And it seems that this lack of guidance as well in terms of what can be done, what cannot be done. I mean, some of the things are just spread positions of being a German company and turned into the price food. It's those are the things that we can then discuss and then submit the questions. Yeah, let us agree that in the meeting, let us visit SAA to get a proper detailed brief on what becomes a turnaround strategy and what becomes a sustainable and durable program that will take
okay,
the airline forward.
Honorable Roy has just spoken on the one that I wanted to raise, the process matter. I want to suggest that we give ourselves 7 days to submit things that we want to become in the next sitting. And then also agree with the Honorable Shilambo on us going into SAA to find out where the problem is. But let's start back with this process of engaging the management and the board. Then we can take further. Thank you.
I honestly think that we actually need a comprehensive presentation from National Treasury. Because where we are starting, it looks like, you know, what Honorable Honkwa is raising now is concerning me when he's saying the very issues that they are raising now are the very issues that were raised in the other portfolio committee, in the portfolio committee that they were accounting to before. And it's important for us to understand from National Treasury what is happening, what is the state of the business right now. And again, the whole issue around the shareholder compact, we need to get clarity from National Treasury. The chairperson is saying that is overboard, but information that I had through my own sources was that the shareholder compact is not yet signed. And therefore, we're not sure. It's going to be important that we get National Treasury. Whatever happens, I'm happy with whatever process, but let's get National Treasury to give us a picture. Because in any case, they are the primary institution that accounts to us, and then they can come with SAA. But National Treasury must give us a
gathering unconvinced sources here.
Okay. Now, I doubt we get some plans. I think there's a remarkable deal of consensus on the way forward. Some of the things I was thinking of, I just open the door so people can come in. But shall we start with this, Chairperson? First reason I think that I think we will seek to meet with you as soon as possible. There are only 2 committee weeks left, but early in October, when the committee reconvenes, in the first week of the quarter. We have to do it then, because we don't do it then, Mr. Chair. We will give you the date for the next, whatever, Monday morning, 11:08, which we'll negotiate with you, so that we hear. Secondly, I think people are right. National Treasury should be here, ideally the Minister or Deputy Minister. Thirdly, I want to say that the shareholder compact, you say, is about to be signed. Can we have it done by then? We'll speak to the Minister. By the time you come here, we'd like the shareholder compact signed, if it's in October. Unless there's at least elements of the shareholder compact should be brought to you, if not the finalized version. That'd be our guide. And I think it's correct. We also like my claims from the
Okay, I was just going to ask you to in that meeting you invite the public enterprise committee so that you repeat what they have repeated.
Okay, my sister, next to you want to speak? Alright, so that's good. That's what I'm going to propose. When I think we should get public enterprise, particularly, but also transport, right? Then I just want to say, Madam Chair, that I think members will, within 7 days, first day Wednesday, next Wednesday by 5 p.m. send through all the questions. I think Sean is here. Is somebody here from you? Sean, can you and Alan sit together, and we'll Bridget, right, and get a series of questions put together? So what we will do, Chairperson, we will give you due notice of all the questions people, at least after the end of this stage, have asked that we feel you haven't responded to in full, and also add additional questions, right? Add further questions. And obviously, when we engage you next time, new questions will come, so obviously we can answer. I think we will send you that with at least a week's notice. But I think it's a bit very badly. Can I alert the Treasury officials? Will you inform the minister this, right? And we will raise with the minister, obviously, a politician. It doesn't reflect well on you that you are not exercising your oversight effectively. The reason the president moved NAA to you is that you can focus and exercise vigorous oversight over them. It's like a minister or a minister is supposed to do a department. He don't think he's doing this. And Makosi is right, and others are right. Actually, we hold you primarily to account. And then the board. And then the management, obviously. So, end of this note, that, you know, we shouldn't also lose sight of the fact that we are collectively responsible, ultimately, for where SA is. Obviously, the board here has a role, the CEO has a role, she's even acting CEO, it's not fair on her. The historical issues, the structural issues, the legacy issues, and so on and so on. There are governance issues, there are relations between ministers and boards and so on, all of which are contributors. And part of the failure to exercise, not least the current chairperson, who is the chairperson for 2.5 years, the public enterprises, the public enterprises committee, we are all collectively, the minister of public, and all collectively responsible for SAA. We want to work, we want to work with you to make it work. We wish you well. We don't think it's easy, to be fair to the current chair of the board. She came in also with all these issues. The CEO is an acting CEO. So we must work together to make it work. And that will be chairperson. There'll be creative tensions here and there between the minister and the portfolio committee, between the board and CEO and committee, and between us and minister and so on. That's part of the mode or routine of a Roman democracy. And in the final circumstances, the challenges being what they are, orders being as they are, we're going to have difficulties. But we need to work together, and we think the next time around, you will have prepared better. We will have been clearer. For us, remember, we're not going to get to private for us. For almost all of us here, except for the public enterprise myself, it's a new terrain. So as we heard you speak, a lot of new issues occur. Otherwise, you'll say, why didn't you write to us 2 weeks ago and tell us exactly, but let's just make the initial foray and find out where you are. So a lot of new things emerge today, which wouldn't have emerged were we not to have heard you say what you said today. So we couldn't anticipate these questions, but now we can, and we're going to have a full framework for our engagement down the road. Thank you very much indeed.